This is Infidel One. Offending Coyote Down. Offending Coyote Down.
Roger that.
Welcome to Trappin' Radio. We're proud, organic, free-range, wild fur farmers of North America.
Let me tell you a little story about how I was raised. Every day work, every day pray. God, family, friends, yeah, everybody sins. A winner never quits, and a quitter never wins. Help folks in need, don't fall for greed. A jealous man is weak, so think before you speak. If you love them, let them know. If you hate, let it go. Fast can be fun, but sometimes you need slow. God is all good, the devil is so real. So listen up, y'all, cause this is how I feel.
I won't back up, I don't back down. I've been raised up to stand my ground. Take my job, but not my guns. Tax my check till I ain't got none. Except for the good Lord up above. I answer to no one.
Now let's cover our sponsors. They do a lot to help support Trappin' Radio. So I'm asking you guys out there and gals to help support our sponsors as they keep Trappin' Radio on the air. First sponsors, Oki Cable and Trap Supply. Jeb's the owner of this. He's out of Oklahoma. Super guy. You'll not meet anybody nicer. It's somebody you're going to want to deal with. You can reach him at oktrapsupply.com. You can give Jeb a call at 918-429-4648. Not only does he do trap supply guys, he's a fur buyer, so if you're around the Oklahoma or surrounding states, give him a call with your fur. When you need stuff, give him a call and he'll get it out to you as soon as he can. Our second sponsor is F&T Fur Harvesters Trading Post. Everything you need for trapping, hunting with hounds, and predator calling. Guys, if you're into trapping fur, hunting fur, chasing fur with dogs, you're not going to be able to think of hardly anything that you can't get from F&T. You can reach them at fntpost.com. You can also give them a call at 989-727-8727. Whatever you want, F&T's got it. Blue Ridge Outdoor Supplies. Scott Payne is the owner of this business. He's in Elkton, Virginia. He also has a lure line, Mountain Rebel Lures and Baits. He's got a great coyote trapping video. He's also a fur buyer in Virginia. Anything that you're looking for and your trapping needs, give Scott a call and he'll get it right out to you. Wildlife Control Supplies, proven solutions for wildlife control, delivering value, expertise, and products to the wildlife individual. If you're an ADC business, control business, even fur trapping, you need to look at these guys' website. Top-notch company, have everything you would want, even the odd stuff that ADC guys are looking for. You can reach them at wildlifecontrolsupplies.com. You can give them a call at 877-684-7262. International number is 860-844-0101. If you're a wildlife control professional, you need to have Wildlife Control Supplies as one of your favorites on your computer or your phone, because when you come across something that you need specialized equipment, Alan will get it right out to you.
Now let's go trapping.
See, I'm a flag flying, Bible toting son of a gun. Yeah, I'm hell on the heart, just a rebel on the run. Scared, don't know it. Fear, don't feel it. The truth is the light. Sometimes you gotta fight. Good beats bad, right beats wrong. I'm a barroom preacher and this is my song. I'm climbing for the top, representing for the country. I'm the people's champ, right out to dig. Shotgun toter, Republican voter, Hank Jr. supporter, let's protect our border. To hell with anyone who don't believe in the USA, cause this is what I say.
I won't back up, I don't back down. I've been raised up to stand my ground. Take my job, but not my guns. Tax my check till I ain't got...
Welcome to Trapping Across America. This is your host, Clint Locklear. We're the organic, free-range, wild fur farmers of America. Come together and talk about what's important in the country, and that's trapping. We're going to have a show tonight. I don't have a guest. I'm going to be interviewing Randy Smith tomorrow, actually. for the radio show about what he's been doing on Coyotes and Fox. But before we get into that, what we're going to be talking about tonight is fur, the fur market, fur prices, selling fur, different things like that. And I'm going to get into the way an entrepreneur, way someone who actually wants to make money trapping, thinks about the fur market. Radically different than a lot of guys are doing it. And if you want to make big licks of money, you got to think past 5 minutes from now. We're going to get into all that in a minute. Before we do, let's take care of our sponsors because they do a lot to take care of you. Our first one this week is Oakey Cable and Trap Supply. Jeb is the owner of this good company. They're out of Oklahoma. He's a fur buyer. So if you're in the Midwest area right there around Oklahoma, give him a shout. He's got all kind of stuff. He's always running specials on Z-Traps. He's really in. He got some high-quality cat urine, guys, and he's got a lot of boards and different things like that, which will play into the show tonight. You can get a hold of Jeb at Oakey Cable and Trap Supply at 918-429-4648. You can also reach him at oktrapsupply.com. Second sponsor this week is Blue Ridge Outdoor Supply. Scott Painter's the owner of this. He's a good friend of mine. He's got a brick-and-mortar store up in Elkton, Virginia. He's also a fur buyer. He's got about everything you would ever want. If you're in the area or online, you can give him a call and he'll probably work a deal with you. He's got all kind of traps, all kind of lure. He's got his own coyote video that's really good. Has his own brand of lures that he makes and sells and uses himself. So if you give Scott a call or get a hold of him online at BlueRidgeOutdoorSupplies.com, he'll definitely help you out. And if you're going to do it the old-fashioned way with a phone, you can call him at 540-298-7227. Third sponsor this week is F&T Fur Harvesters Trading Post. They have everything you need for trapping, hunting with hounds, and predator calling. And guys, that ain't no joke. Anything you need to do with anything that has to do with putting fur on the ground and sending fur to Canada, they pretty much have you locked up on. Everything from traps to clothes. I mean, it is amazing what they have. And you can get a hold of them at fntpost.com. And you can also give them a call at 989-727-8727. There's a good chance who you're going to be talking to on the phone are the same people that you're going to be seeing on the Freedom Brands Outdoor Show that is now running live, the new episodes on the Pursuit Channel. But anything you're looking for, they're about as close as you can get to the Cabela's of trapping as you can get. I mean, they're spread so far out and have so much inventory. If it's out there, they can pretty much get it for you. Our fourth sponsor this week is Wildlife Control Supplies. Alan's the owner of that. Very professional guy. Has one of the most professionally ran ADC supply businesses that I've ever seen. I mean, you're dealing with top-notch, quality-controlled people that deliver proven solutions for wildlife control. They deliver value, expertise, and products to the wildlife industry professionals. Now, you can reach Wildlife Control Supply at 877-684-7262. International number is 860-844-0101. And their website, where they have all their stuff online on their store, is wildlifecontrolsupplies.com. That's our sponsors. They sponsor the radio show, so we've had to go to a completely dedicated server now, and they help pay those bills. So if you're going to be ordering and you appreciate the trapping radio show, you know, give them a shot first because they're actually doing something for you that they don't really have to do to try to expand trapping, you know, to get it in front of different people like that. Well, I want to go and get into the subject tonight because I don't know how long this will run. It may be a shorter show, it may be a longer show. After the show last week, I was told everything I should be a preacher to all kind of stuff, and that kind of took me by surprise. But if you didn't listen to last week's show, I believe it was show 95, you ought to go back and listen to it because it's going to kind of play into what we're going to be talking about tonight. And I want to talk about how you think. Because the most important tool any trapper's got is between his two ears. It's not what he does when he goes out on the line. It's actually not what you do when you put a trap in the ground. It's everything else. When I first took instruction from Craig O'Gorman, and I've said this before, it wasn't so much how he set the trap or his dogs or the drags or going out and calling with him and stuff like that. What really, really made the big difference to me was seeing how a professional thought, how that professional acted, how that professional worked through problems, how that professional had a different perspective than most trappers that don't get to trap as much, or hobby trappers, however you want to say. And when I use the word hobby trapper on here, professional trapper, longliner trapper, guys, we're all trappers. We just go about it in a different direction. But what we're doing, whether it be longlining or shortlining, or catching 1,000 animals or 100 animals, it's the same thing. We're just taking it and going about it a totally different way. There's a lot of guys that don't want to work at trapping to the point where it becomes an obsessive artwork of work. And there's a lot of guys that when they start trapping, they don't know how to think anyway except push it, push it, push it. Both of them are saying none of them is no better than anybody else. So when I use the term hobby trapper, don't think that I'm putting somebody down because you're not trapping full time, because that is not the case. But there is a huge difference in the two about the way that the, you know, a hobby trapper looks at trapping in more of a sport a lot of times, that he can make some extra income, he can spend some more time outdoors. A professional trapper treats his job just like a commercial welding treats his job. It's production. Or a farmer looks at the way he farms. It's production. And so the two mindsets may be a little bit different in what they're doing, but it's the same exact same thing when you're going out there and doing it. We're all brothers when it comes to trapping, as far as I'm concerned. But I do want to talk about the fur market. And the way to start this show tonight, I believe, is talk about the fur market as it is right now. And the way it is right now, guys, nobody knows. Nobody really knows what the fur market is. NAFA doesn't know how many buyers are going to show up. They don't know if it's going to be higher and lower than last year. Right now they're thinking lower. We're going to talk a little bit about that. But no one really knows. A lot of the fur prices that you're seeing, some of the local auction, the prices are high. I mean, right where everybody thought they would be. And then there's a lot of local buyers that they're not paying that much. It's a lot cheaper. They're being a lot more withdrawn in how they look at how the market's going to be. And, you know, both of those type things, again, are just like hobby trappers and professional trappers. They're looking at it different. But there's a lot of speculation that's going on right now about what the fur market truly is going to do. And guys, nobody knows. But, you know, the rumors on the computer can scare somebody to death. But let me tell you something about rumors on the computer. Most of them are based on a very little bit of fact and a whole lot of conjecture. And what you're seeing on a lot of the social media platforms and the trapping forums and different things like that, it's a whole lot of conjecture. And I'm going to throw my conjecture into the mix tonight, and it may be wrong. You know, I'm an optimist by nature. So that's just the way that I work. So I'm going to look at this from my point of view, because that's the only point of view I've got really to talk about. But I've talked to a lot of fur buyers kind of about what's going on, and some guys that are a little bit more in the know than some of the guys that are saying a bunch of stuff on the trapping forums. There's something that happened this year that really threw a monkey wrench into the fur market. Hands down, it's got a lot of people nervous. Part of the reason that a lot of the fur prices that I've heard some guys selling and buying fur for, it seems really, really low, is because no one really knows what that price is. So the guys that are buying fur, they don't want to get stuck with it. And I'm going to, And if you're thinking fur buyers are always out to take advantage of you, sometimes they are, sometimes they aren't. They're just a business like anybody else. If you buy something for a dollar, you probably got to sell it for $1.30 or $1.50, whatever the cost of production to get that you bought from somebody into somebody else's hands. And there's a lot of cost involved with that. So if an otter's worth $100 per se, and that's kind of the going price at an international auction or on a private treaty auction, and you think that a local fur buyer can pay you $100 for that, he can't. He's not trying to take advantage of you, but there's no way that he can. Because he's going to buy that. He's probably going to process it. He's going to have paperwork on it. He's going to have shipping costs attached to it. And he's going to have to sit on his money for a certain amount of time. Now, some fur buyers think 10%, 20%, 30%, whatever the percentage that they try to run their business on. So if they're on a 20%, what they think they have to do to make money, they're going to pay you $80 for that otter. But you get your money right then. And the thing about selling local like that is you don't really have any risk involved when you sell that fur. When a fur buyer buys your fur, especially a local fur buyer, he's got a tremendous amount of risk. And I think that's why we're seeing such fluctuations in prices right now, is that risk tolerance. It can be pretty rough. And I'm going to give you a story. I'm not going to mention the state or the fur buyer, because I haven't talked to him about, you know, using his name or whatever on this. But there was a fur buyer, I guess this was right now the otter prices are bouncing between that 80 and 100, 110 mark. And then it got really low, and then we had that boom. And that boom was probably 7, 8, 9 years ago, I guess. And otter were getting up to crazy numbers. I had a group of otter I sold that averaged $252. Now, that's making some jack on an animal. Average, though, overall at that time was about $130, $140 for good pale otter, which that's changed in the fur market. Now they're wanting darker ones, but at that time they wanted pale. I happened to be in a lot of areas that had super pale otter, almost aluminum-looking color. I mean, they were that pale of otter. So they brought a big money. Well, as that price got up, you got to think, you know, we're going to go a lot of different directions tonight, but I want you to kind of follow me so you get kind of a bigger grasp about what's going on. You have a local fur buyer that's going to buy fur. The higher that fur is, the more risk he's got involved. So if otter's bringing, just to keep numbers simple here, $100 across the board. So you got $100 otter. That means every 10 that fur buyer buys, he's got $1,000 into it. Now, if he's only making 20%, that means he's going to make $200 on $1,000. Well, if he buys 100 of them, he's got a lot of money in that fur. And as the fur prices got high, just like everybody thought they were going to be this year, there's so much capital involved from that fur buyer. When a lot of these fur buyers you're seeing, guys, they're not just $20,000, $30,000 buying fur. They're $200,000 or $300,000 buying fur. Some of them are a couple of $1 million in buying fur. And they're doing it on not that big of a margin for the most part. So this fur buyer that I knew, he was buying all these otter at that time, actually around $80 to $100. So, I mean, he was buying them at where he could actually make about 30%, probably average, which is pretty normal in business a lot of times. So he, you know, he wasn't really sticking it to anybody, but he was going to make a little bit of money off of them, 30%. And most of the stuff he was buying was green, so he had to put them up. So that's probably going to put his cost up there close to $88, something like that, by the time that got done, and all the paperwork and the tags and all that other stuff. So he probably had somewhere around $88, and he had literally thousands of otter at that price. Now, all of a sudden, in a week's period of time, that fur buyer went from having something that was valued at $100 to $120, $130 a piece to being valued down to $15. So that fur buyer was in the hole several hundred thousand dollars in the course of probably about an 8-hour span. He went from making 30% to being close to $300,000 in the hole off of one animal. Well, a lot of the fur market dropped. He was in it about 50 grand, I mean, probably about $500,000 in the hole. So, you know, it's easy to beat up on a local fur buyer, but, you know, put yourself in his shoes a little bit. Because if you buy coon for, say, $20 a piece, and you can make $24 on those coons, you're going to make $4. But those coon can just as easily, immediately, go down to $10. Well, if you've got 1,000 of them, you're at $10,000 in the hole right off the bat. So I think you've got to keep that in mind about what's happening right now. There's a ton of risk, that most trappers don't really look at when they're selling fur to a fur buyer. It's easy to think, well, I heard so-and-so's getting $25 for the coon at a sale in Napa, not taking account the risk of that money being out of your hands for several months, and you've got CITES tags on certain animals you got to pay for, tumbling tags on certain animals you got to pay for, and the commission take coming off of that. Not, that's normally not in the thought process when someone hears some of these numbers. So a local guy, he may be $10, $15 cheaper. Well, he's trying to screw me. He's probably not trying to screw you. He's just trying to make money. Because if he can't make money, there's no reason for him to be in business. It'd be like you going to work, and it costs you $25 a day in gas to get to work, and your boss goes, well, I think we're going to pay y'all $20 a day to show up to work. It's going to cost you money to come to work. You ain't going to go to work no more. It's the same thing with that fur buyer. But that risk involved on that local guy is the reason a lot of the fur buyers are pulling back so hard. Because it's not like they're going to lose, you know, a few thousand dollars if they get it wrong. They could lose their house. Because most fur buyers have lines of credit on property, houses, farms, stuff like that. Tremendous amount of risk. So when something gets uneasy, they're going to pull back in that shell. So that's what a lot of the local guys are doing. And that's why, and I think especially a younger trapper needs to understand that. Because the world's bigger than you're catching a coon and you're going to sell a coon and you get money for that coon. There's this, the fur industry is billions of dollars. So it's not like just that little transaction between you. There's a whole lot of things that are going on right then. Well, what happened in our fur market today that really threw a loop in the wrench is China wants, being a government, like our government and everybody else's government, they think they own everybody else's production. And they're going to get that production through taxes. Now, any business, they're also looking at their bottom line. So if you buy $1 million worth of fur, and the government just decides, well, if you're going to bring that fur back into the country and you're going to make money on it, you're going to give us 20% of it. That's $200,000 they're going to give the Chinese government just because the Chinese government is so nice to take their money, which is really what taxes are. So being human beings, and everybody's the same way, they're looking at that and they went, yeah, we think we can get around that, which I personally, I don't hold it against them one bit. You know, like I've said before, when it comes to government, starve the beast. And it doesn't matter if it's our government or somebody else's government. They need to be a little hungry every now and then instead of just fat and happy off everybody else's stuff. But these guys, the bigger fur buyers in China, got caught smuggling the fur in and not paying taxes in China. The Chinese government, doing what governments and mafias always do, they go, we want our money and we want it now. Well, businesses run off of cash flow. And a lot of these fur buyers probably didn't have the amount of money that the government is wanting at the time. So they shut a bunch of stuff down. Now, it's strange that you're going out in, say, a state like Georgia, and you're going to catch a raccoon to sell to a fur buyer, is being affected by a Chinese fur buyer that got caught not paying his taxes in China, and that can turn around and, in result, cut the price of your fur this year. But guys, that looks like kind of what's going to happen, because China is the biggest buyer and market for our fur. So if they're not going to, if the government has put a wall up, and all of a sudden now they're looking under every rock and crevice to try to get every single penny they can get out, or yen or whatever they got over there, out of everybody they can get out of, they've turned their focus on the fur industry. And they're going to go, we want our money. So now all of the fur market is doing what everybody does when the IRS is standing at your front door. You feel kind of sick to your stomach. And they're going, we don't know. Because just like your local fur business, those guys that buy that fur in China, they've got risks too. They've got lines of credit out for the most part to be able to buy this fur. And if the government decides to screw them, they're just going to confiscate the fur. I don't know what they're going to do with it at that point, but they could. And now that guy still got to pay all those bills back, still has all those expenses, still wrote all those checks, and now he ain't got nothing to sell. So when you think about it in that point of view, you can kind of understand why the Chinese buyers are a little bit nervous right now. Now, saying that, let's look at the fur market realistically in the country right now. There's two trains of thought, and I can tell you from being in the supply business selling lure, there is a ton, well, I'd say that several tons of new trappers right now on the market. They got excited about it for whatever reason. They saw the prices were high. There seems to be a resurgence in people wanting to do stuff outdoors, trapping, you know, compared to a lot of things, like an elk hunt's pretty cheap. So we have an influx of these trappers. There's a ton of stuff that was bought that we would not have bought in our normal trapping industry in the vacuum that we think of it. So it expanded this year. Well, those trappers are going to catch fur, no matter how green they are, how much the competition gets, anything like that, they're going to catch fur. Then you got the normal guys that's going to be catching fur, just like they normally do. So in theory, the fur catch should be bigger. And fur is, you know, people get in little arguments all the time if fur is a commodity or not, because it's not traded on the wheat exchange or something. You know, I'm not going to get into all the ins and out of that, or if that even makes any sense. Everything is still based off supply and demand. Every single thing is still based off supply and demand. If you've got the neat little gadget for Christmas that everybody wants and you can't make enough of them, they're all of a sudden worth 10 times more than what you're selling them for on the black market. Demand is going to get its product one way or the other. It's kind of like moonshiners. I'm from Appalachian America. To me, some of the people that are heroes in American history are moonshiners. They didn't let a little misplaced law from the federal government tell them that they couldn't make money. They went and did it anyway. I think that was a noble thing to do. Regardless if you believe or not in that or not, I don't know. But the demand for the moonshine and the alcohol was there. People are going to look at that and go, the demand's there. People are standing there with their money. They want the product. So how are we going to get them this product? And moonshiners figured out, we'll go in the woods. We'll build a steel. We know how to do this. And we'll outrun the law if we have to. We're going to meet that demand. I personally think that the same thing is going to happen in China as what happened in Appalachia. Hopefully, it doesn't have to go underground that hard, because the demand is there. China wants our fur. It culturally, it means a lot to them. It doesn't mean the same to us as it does them. It really means a lot to them. Russia still wants high quality fur. Russia is flush with money because gas is $3.50 a gallon. They want the money. One of the only industries that's still kicking in Greece, as bad as that country is fur. They have the knowledge and the skill to meet the demand of processing a lot of that fur. So there's ways to get it done. The demand is there. The demand is going to get met, regardless of what the government decides. It's kind of like the drug on war. I don't care how much money they spend on it. There's still going to be drugs. Why? Because the demand's there. People are going to figure out a way to meet that demand. That's still going to happen in our fur industry. It's still, demand's going to get met. Demand's king on any type of open market. And luckily for us in America, for us trappers, that demand comes from our product. Now, we also have to look at the economies. China is red hot. They are now the leading, you know, everybody used to think that, you know, China has got to do whatever we want because we're the number one consumer in the world. We're not the number one consumer in the world anymore, guys. They are. Their economy is supposed to surpass America's in the next about 3 years. We're not the big boys on the block anymore. No matter how you feel about that, facts are just facts. China is. You've got oil-producing companies or countries like Russia that's still going to have the money to buy this stuff. So the demand is rock solid. And the people that want fur in China are the way, just by the natural way of business, and you need people to do stuff. A lot of people now are coming out of rice fields and they're going into factories, and they're not making what we make by any stretch of the imagination. But what it's doing, it's lifting everybody up in China on income. They've got the fastest growing middle class. They've got way more millionaires than we do. And they want the fur. So keep that in mind when you're thinking about all this. You've got local guys now that are scared of the risk. And I have to say, I really can't blame them. You've got international fur buyers that are worried about a government that can put the boot on their throat if they decide to. They're nervous. What we thought was coming with a really big, strong fur market, no one knows if that's going to fall through or not. Because there's one thing, I believe, that could be a saving grace to our fur this year. The weather. It has been -1 degrees where I live in Tennessee. I can be in Georgia or Alabama in 30 minutes. -1 degree. Central Louisiana was 6 and 8 degrees. When you get above Kentucky and probably the middle part of Missouri, you started hitting almost Minnesota-type weather where it's usually not Minnesota-type weather. And you know, poor guys up there in Minnesota and Wisconsin and Michigan and all that, y'all might as well have moved to Fairbanks, Alaska when I lived up there. That's the temperatures. That's what the weather looks like up there. Now, even though all this stuff was bought and all these guys were fired up to go trapping, and you may be one of them, did the weather screw up the catch? I guarantee you it did. How many opening days in Iowa did they have before the weather just started just raising havoc with ice and snow? They only had a few. The numbers we're used to seeing is based off of 20 and 30 and 60 day trapping seasons in a lot of these Midwest states. And that's the states that bring in the most fur. They got shut down. Did they still catch some fur? Oh, sure they did. But not near in the numbers that they used to. The fur harvesters just had an auction, international auction. It was not much bigger on a lot of stuff than some of the state auctions were. The fur's not out there, guys. Last year when prices jumped up and it looked like they were gonna stay up and the price was really high, all of the dealers and everybody that had anything that had fur on it in the freezer dumped them to North American Fur Auction. Or dumped them to somebody that was going to end up with it in North American Fur Auction. So all the freezers are cleared out. We've had weather that we haven't seen since the 70s. So we're not going to have the catch of fur. When you get to really talking to a lot of guys are not catching the numbers they were 2 and 3 years ago. The weather is changing. Al Gore is going to be a little upset with me on this, but global warming is turning into global cooling. And that's just a natural cycle that we seem to be getting into right now. You know, and the thing is, this particular cooling cycle, if you go back through our history, it was cold around the 1890s, the beginning of the century. It started warming up about the time the Depression hit. So you had really hot weather. You had very archaic style of farming. You had the dust bowls. In the 50s, 60s, and 70s, it was cold. In the 80s, it was hot. And now we're going back into the cooling section. There's nothing, I don't know what the scientists have such trouble with, because it's just a natural cycle of stuff. And it's going to continue to get cold on us for the next several years. So our fur catch is probably not going to be what it was back during when we had these El Ninos and guys in Iowa were trapping open water in January. They're looking at open water in October and praying for open water the 10th of November. That's just a reality that we live in right now. So we're getting worse weather. Our catch is down. The demand is there. The people that want the fur have money. But everybody's not sure right now about what's going on. Therefore, we're seeing what we see with everything going on with the fur prices. I've talked to a lot of fur buyers that are buying coon for $5. Beaver, cheap. Now, the otter seem to be holding price. Cats seem to be somewhat holding their price. Coyotes, it depends on the fur buyer. But I was talking to Jeff Dunlap today, and he brought up an interesting point. You know, and not to go into conspiracy theories or anything, but he did bring up a very valid point, which is, on our fur market, if China's the reason that the coon market's down, which they tell us, and China's the reason our beaver market's down, and that's what they're telling us, the otter are also going to China, and they're holding strong. The muskrats are going to China, and they're holding strong. So it seems kind of something's disjointed there. Something there is got to give. Either it is China or it isn't China. It is the China buyers or it's not the China buyers. It's hard to imagine that it's just China coon buyers or China beaver buyers. But I guess stranger things have happened. That's just one of those weird things when you sit back and you go, you really don't know how to take something like that, but I think Jeff's absolutely right. It's just disjointed about the logic, looking at it from a logical point of view. So we came into this fur season. Everybody, me included, I've got otters sitting out on my floor right now. You know, when I catch them, I'm thinking $100, but I don't know exactly what they are. I've got beavers sitting out there on the floor that I'll be skinning tomorrow that I really don't know what they're worth. And I really don't think anybody knows what they're worth. Because when you think about the bigger picture of our fur market, the way China is always on a teeter-totter of having so many people that are sick and tired of being poor, and you give them a little bit of money at these fur factories, and now you're telling them they're just going to sit there and look at each other? Well, they're not going to be very happy. And we're not talking about like we're talking cities. When over in China, they don't do factories like we do. You got a bunch of factories in a city that do different things. They have whole cities that are set up for just fur. I mean, whole cities that are just for fur processing. That's the way that they manage stuff over there. So you got whole cities now that are being basically shut down because there won't be fur coming in, and these people are going to want to get paid just like anybody else. They're going to want to eat just like everybody else. The Chinese government cannot afford to let those factories sit still very long because they'll have an uprising they're going to have to deal with. Now, they want their tax money, but they also want to have control over the people. So there's going to be a balancing act in one way or another is going to happen on that. You know, we might want to think that because it's China and they're communist-based and this, that, and the other, that they just pretty much do whatever they want to the people. And to the point, that's true. But if you look at the way the people are starting to revolt against being in that system, the government doesn't want to ever lose that power. So they're going to do things to keep it running as smoothly as possible. And right now, they got whole cities that are based around the fur industry that are not working. So it's a whole lot of unhappy people. That ain't going to last very long. So that's one thing to keep in mind about this whole thing. We have a short catch. They got the factories. They got the workers. They got the money. And they want the product. Something is going to break loose, guys, about this. Now, the downside about this, will it be in the next 30 or 60 days? That's the big question. That's what everybody's trying to figure out. Because if the guys that got nailed on the taxes get thrown in prison because they don't have the money, there will be another Chinese fur buyer step up to make that money. Just like the moonshiners did back during Prohibition. Demand is going to get met. So that's kind of where we're at in the world on fur market, the best that I know anyway. So when you hear about fur prices, it's because nobody knows. But when you hear about why, it is true to a point about this one thing, but then why are the otter and the muskrat still selling high? I mean, that doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. So what can we do as trappers when we hear this information? Now, this is where we're going to get to the entrepreneur part of being a trapper. And this is going to be... There's probably going to be some things said here in a minute because I usually get wound tight when I talk about stuff like this. And none of this is scripted. And, you know, this is off the top of my head talking about a subject. So if I say something that offends somebody, it's not to offend you. But it could be to drive a point home. And I'm sure there's going to be some people that's not going to like looking at things from my point of view. Now, I'm nothing special. Before we get into this, I'm nothing special at all, except I am an entrepreneur, and I'm not ashamed of that for any reason whatsoever. I'm a business owner, so I look at things from a business point of view. I do not look at things from an employee's point of view, because I'm not an employee. I'm not someone who trades hours for money. That's not the way that my world works. I don't think that someone that looks at things in terms of hours to money gets a grasp on how limited that is on their life. I don't want to go there unless I absolutely have to, and I promise you it won't be for very long if I have to, because it's limiting. Now, the same thing's going to go for trappers. Someone that works 40 hours a week and gets a paycheck, everything is in short little bitty time periods that they think about. You work 40 hours, you get a paycheck. You go trapping for a season, then you get paid. You go trapping on a trip, you go find a fur buyer, and you get paid. That type of thinking sometimes is necessary, guys. I'll admit that 100%. Back when I was getting in trapping, it didn't matter if coons were $2 or $200. I had to sell them. I had to make a mortgage. You know, most people today don't really live that way. Back when I was doing it, I was just too hard-headed to think there was any other way to do it. If you've got a job or you've got other sources of income and you're trapping and you're looking at that as extra money, dude, you've got options. You've got powerful options. As long as you don't think of it in the terms of short term, 5 minutes from now, 6 months from now, a month from now. You know, and I've kind of hit on what I'm going to talk about in a radio show when I first started. And I call it the trapper stock market. but it's really powerful if you put it to use, because it's kind of like farmers. Price of corn goes down, farmers produce more corn, drives the price down, and then they ain't got no money, and then they're complaining because they ain't got no money, and then the taxpayers get to bail them out again. Now, farmers have a choice about the market to some degree. One, they can take that corn and do something with it themselves and cut out all the middlemen, all the stock exchanges, and everything like that. Very few farmers do that. They think like employees, even though they're self-employed and they get mad being called an employee, but they think like an employee. Short term, this season to the next season. That's how they think about it. They don't think about it in a larger term of the power, true power farmers have if they would actually understand how important that could be in their own personal business and how it would help out all the other farmers. If the corn prices start dropping, don't sell. Now, there's always going to be farmers and people that's going to break the ranks, and I hear this story all the time about trappers. If there's 50% less corn on the market, the price is going to rise. We're going to exchange corn for coons in a minute. But the farmers, when they see the price start dropping, they can hold. They can dictate. If they're not in debt up to their eyeballs, they can dictate how much of that corn they can sell. They could, as a group, if they all kind of thought past just, you know, 3 months from now, we can change this market. We can force the corn prices to go up. And they could. Farmers are very individual. They don't like being in groups. They're kind of ornery. Does that sound familiar to anybody out there? Kind of sounds like trappers. We drive trucks and jeeps, boats and canoes. They drive combines. Kind of in the same predicament. But you as the individual trapper, as long as you're not in a situation where you have to, now let me make that very clear, have to, desperate to, sell fur to make ends meet, you've got options. If you're that desperate, you never hardly ever have the options, like I didn't have. I was in a situation from my own decisions that put me in that situation. Well, it didn't matter if coons were $2, I had to go catch a bunch more of them. Which in return, when a lot of other people are doing that and there's a glut on the market of cheap stuff, it ain't going to get more expensive. But we as trappers, we've got a lot of power. And you as a trapper, you've got a lot of power. Now, we don't know what's going on in the fur market. You've got a product that is wanted. There's a demand for it. You've got a product that the people that want it got money. You're looking at a market now that's going through systems that's completely out of your control. If you put your product on that system or in that market, or you ship it to an auction, or you sell it to a local buyer, you're just going to get whatever it is you get. And that's all you're ever going to get. That's not very smart to me. And you may be in a certain situation, guys, and trust me, I've been there. I was there just a couple of years ago. Well, I had to make a decision on fur prices. I had to sell enough fur to get by, but I didn't sell all the fur. I held it over because I had a product that I thought had value, and I had a product that I thought that people would be willing to pay more money for at a different time. It's just like the housing market. You buy a house. You get in a housing bubble, kind of like we're getting ourselves back into. You spend $200,000 on this house. The bubble crashes. Now your house is worth $120,000. The house ain't changed. It's a perception of the value of that that's changed. That's the only thing that's changed. It's what the market will give you at that particular time. Now let's think about this in the ways of an entrepreneur, the way he can think about his trapping. If coons are worth save $5 right now, or $10, say $10. So they're worth $10. And you're trapping, but you don't have to have that money. Maybe not all that money that you can go through, and you can separate that out and actually generate some more income different ways. You've got a product that's still worth something. You know, a gold ring is a gold ring is a gold ring. The price of gold goes up and down. When you sell that gold ring is totally up to you. You can sell it high or you can sell it low. If you bought it for $1,000 and you sell it for $500, you just lost $500. If you bought it for $1,000 and you sell it for $1,000, you ain't made no money. If you bought it for $1,000 when gold's $1,700 an ounce, you make $700 on it if you have an ounce in that ring, or whatever that percentage is, and you've made money. That's the way an entrepreneur looks at his trap line. The otter and the beaver I've got sitting out on my shop floor right now, I'll be skinning tomorrow. I want to sell those at the max amount of money that I can sell them. If the market, just like the housing bubble, decides that the value of that is really low right now, guess what? I ain't got to sell it. It's my product. I produced it. I can do with it whatever I want to. I don't have to go sell it right now, as long as I've got other ways of income. And most people, regardless of what they say today, have jobs, and they're not going to lose their house, and they're not going to go hungry, and their car's not going to get repossessed if they don't sell the car or if they don't sell their fur. They sell the fur because they're thinking in very short-term type things. And, you know, a phrase that a friend of mine in Arizona wisely says, and he teaches his kids this in class, are you thinking in terms of short-term hedonism or long-term consequences? Now, those otters sitting on my shop floor out there right now, I think it's worth $100. If the market's going to be a little rocky this year, they ain't going to market. I'm not going to get rid of those at $75 if that's what the market's bringing. I think they're worth $100. Now, there's risk involved in what I'm saying. What if the market gets worse? You know, fur does have a shelf life. Everything in life's a gamble, one way or the other. But I would rather gamble with a plan than I would just give up because whatever's going on around the world that's completely out of my control, that I don't have anything to say about anything. That's what you need to be thinking about. So with this fur market, you've got fur. You decide if you're going to sell that fur and at what price. You decide if you're going to give it away because it's what you do, or you look at it from a business point of view and you sit there and go, well, I wait till the market changes. You know, it's no different from guys that buy silver. You can buy it at $22 an ounce probably today. You know, I bought it for $30. One of these days, it'll be worth $50 or $60. I ain't selling my silver at $20 an ounce. I'm going to wait till it's $60. And that's the way that I'm looking at that fur. You have the option. You have the option to sell that whenever you want to sell that. And unfortunately, most guys don't look at their fur in that type of context. And that's the way that an entrepreneur is going to look at that. My advice to anybody out there when it comes to their fur, and I almost advise you not to take my advice, the way it's rocky right now, I would hold off on getting it anywhere in a hurry. I just take a wait and see aspect. That's going to do two things. One, if there's less fur on the market, just like there could be less corn on the stock exchange, it's going to give the illusion, whether it's real or not, that the catch is even shorter than it actually is. If it's shorter than it actually is, that means the people that want it are going to pay more for it. And that way we can kind of see what's going on. Now, usually the best auction to get stuff, especially in NAFTA, is in February. If you really, 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 really need that money, I would send it up there in February. If you don't really need that money and it's not going to, you know, put you in some serious situation, I might hold off to the May sale.
to put it in. If everything still seems discombobulated, maybe you want to hold on that stuff till next year. Now, in certain states, you're going to have to get permits from that. So if you're new to this, you need to really look at your laws about that. There may be a way that if you explain to NAFA that you don't want to sell this year, but you want to do it to NAFA, they hold fur all the time. I'm sure there is a cost value to that. But they're in cold storage. They got backup generators, all those different things like that. Where if your freezer goes down, you don't lose a whole season's worth of fur or a whole freezer's worth of fur. So you got different things like that to think about. But let that be up to you. Don't let that be up to somebody else. It's your fur. You decide when you're going to sell it and at what market you're going to sell it. Now, if there's a 10-year run on almost no prices, well, then you're going to trap because you're a trapper. There ain't a whole lot you can do with it. But the way that the reason that it's in flux right now with the price, you've got the option to control your destiny a little bit on what your fur's worth. There's going to be a ton of guys going to sell no matter what. That's fine. I mean, I can tell you from an entrepreneur's point of view, I got so much going on, I can't even think about doing that right now. If coon are really getting $5, if people are paying $5 for coon and getting a bunch of them, and you want to go make some money, I'd go buy some $5 coon and put them up. Put them up. Either keep them in a freezer, keep them in a, even if you got a good chunk of change, you could actually put those in some type of freezer unit. Talk to some fur buyer that's got a walk-in freezer or something. Put it up, like I've done before, where I put the fur completely up and I vacuum seal them. Put them in an air-conditioned room. They do fine for several years. But if you can buy a coon for $5 and it goes back up to $20, how in the world is anything in the stock market going to compete with that? It's not. It gives you the options that most people don't think about. That's the way an entrepreneur looks at his fur. That's his production. He gets to choose how he sells it. You know, it may be a year to start thinking about tanning some. I got a feeling if the prices go down, there's going to be tan fur everywhere. So the supply and demand on that may get a little bit out of whack. But the biggest thing I wanted to try to get you to think about from a trapping point of view is it's your production, it's your product. You get to choose the markets you sell it on. I would advise holding off. For one, I think it's, like I said, I think it's really going to make the fur catch a lot shorter than what it is. The buyers are going to really want whatever's out there, and they're going to pay a whole lot more for it. So when the next auction comes up, well, even if it's next year, you have a chance to get what you really get paid for what you've done. And then you may be thinking, well, that's crazy to hold that fur over. If you've got a 401k right now, or you've got some form of investment, and you put $1,000 in that thing and you're getting a 4% return, you're making what, $40 on that for a whole year? If you've got a coon that you sell now for $5 and you can sell it for $20 once the fur market recovers, because it's going to recover. Everything's there to recover. How many hundreds of percent of you making on that right then? The fur is no different than the rest of the world. It's just a different product. So that's kind of what I want everybody to think about when they're thinking about everything they're hearing online, about what the market's doing, about, well, I'm going to get screwed this year because the market dropped. Or, you know, woe is me, I'm not going to get what... Dude, everything is in your control if you decide to take it. And that's what I want to impart on you this week on Trapping Across America. Just some things to think about. I think for guys that'll pay attention to this and really think about their fur maybe in a different way, you'll find out there's ways you can make some big licks trapping that you don't have in a lot of other things in your normal life, especially if you're working by the hour, because it allows you to control some stuff that most people are throwing away this opportunity when they don't have to. Okay, guys, let's kick up this entrepreneur trapping way of thinking just a little bit. When prices are down, someone that thinks in short term, they're thinking of right now, they're thinking of what they're going to be able to get in 2 months for their work right now. that is going to get you in trouble, in my opinion. If you're thinking about this in terms of actually like an entrepreneur, and I'm going to do a radio show, and I'm trying to get everything in order on it so I don't lead anybody down the wrong path, but I'm going to do a radio show on why your trapping needs to be a small business. And I promise you, when you hear some of the reasons why, you're probably going to get mad at businesses. That's just the system that we live in. And if you're not trapping as a business, dude, you're hurting yourself big time. But we're going to get into that. So we're going to think like an entrepreneur here for a little bit. What does an entrepreneur think about his fur? You got your production. You've got a product. You got people that want that product. They got money for that product. You get to decide when it is. So, on years you have high prices of stuff like, right now, otter, muskrats, and bobcats seem to be kind of the king dogs right now on the market. Well, let's say you're in a place you only allowed 5 bobcats. Well, if you use something like a cage or footholds, and you're looking at your production in a certain way and say you're going to catch, you have a system in place that you can turn loose stuff, and you keep the very 5 best cats that you catch. You just don't kill the first 5 you catch. You pick the ones you want to catch. You send those off. That could be quite a bit of money right now. Same thing with the otter. If you're allowed so many otter, and that's the high price thing, and you've got otter in your area, you tag those otter. Now, let's say we do have $5 coon right now. Don't know, you know, but if we had $5 coon, we had $150 bobcats where you're at, it makes sense. Well, the high dollar stuff is the bobcats. Now you've got $5 coon. You're bypassing all these coon, thinking only about catching those bobcats. I'll tell you how an entrepreneur looks at that. Even though the coons are only worth $5, and if a trapper thinks of a coon in the terms of $5, he's always going to be a trapper that doesn't make any money. And you don't want to be that trapper, guys. You want to be the trapper that enjoys being out in the woods and gets paid for what you're doing. I know you do, regardless of all the nonsense that goes on about being just for the heritage and all that. Everybody wants to get paid for what they're doing. It's human nature. There's nothing wrong with it. Profit is not a dirty word. So you get $5 coon this year, for example, because I really don't think they're $5, but if they're $5 coon, and you can run some lines before and after work. A guy that's thinking about the future not 2 months from now, he's still going to hammer the living snot out of those coon. He's going to try to pick up mink, even if they're not bringing very much money. He's still going to try to pick up beaver if he comes across them, because even if they're not bringing very much money. If you think past 2 months and you're willing and set up to hold stuff, and like I said, don't get yourself in a financial situation, but think about truly what needs and wants are. Needing to sell fur is because your house payment is going to be behind. You're not going to have food. You're going to lose your car. That's a need. A want is, I want to have some more money to spend. I want to get paid right now. Just like a kid, I want my money right now. You don't want to be that guy. That guy doesn't do very well in the end. You want to be the guy that strategizes, is very tactical in the way that he's thinking. So those coon are worth $5 this year. The bobcats are worth, say, $150. You sell those cats. That's good money. That's great, man. Good job. You ain't got all these coon you're sitting there on. Go ahead and put them up. I really suggest if you're going to store fur, you put it up and then you freeze it or air. Take the air out of it, put it in an air-conditioned room, something like that. It's always better to have it put up. If your freezer goes down, it ain't going to rot if it's put up. You may get some mold on it. You can get the mold off of it. No big deal. Well, let me ask you guys something. When you go to a fur buyer's place and you see walk-in freezers full of fur that's on the low end of the spectrum, do you think you're selling that fur this year? Probably not. When you go by certain people that places that buy fur, and you see reefer trucks that they run for 5 years with coon and stuff like that in it on a down market, muskrats, things like that, do you think they're doing that just because they want to have a higher electric bill? Hell no, they're not. They're doing it because they're going to make a massive lick of money. Now, as an individual trapper, unless you're buying stuff, you're not going to be in that massive lick, but you can be in a nice lick. So if you catch these raccoons and the market goes, they're worth $5, you go, no, not going to make any money on $5. I'll hold these, but I've got these nice bobcats. I'll sell you these. Maybe this will pay for the expenses. Now, in the next 2 to 3 months, you're not going to have that extra money in your pocket, and you may feel a little bit sad about it. But down the road, you can pick the market you sell those on. All the stuff that got dumped out of freezers last year were from people that had fur and bought fur, and they bought it at $5 and $7, and they sold it for $25. If you've got money in a CD in the bank, what are they giving you, like 0.3%? People will keep that in there for a decade to make $5. They won't hold their fur for 3 years to make 800% on their money. That's the insanity of the way a lot of trappers are looking at trapping. They're not thinking. They're just reacting. They're thinking like an employee, not like a business. So if the coons are low, store the freaking things. If coons, I've only bought fur 2 times in my life. I remember back about 7, 8 years ago, northern Illinois raccoons I could buy for $5 and $7. I'm talking big, monster, beautiful, highest priced coons there are in the country. I went up to Illinois and I bought them. I bought some mink, I bought some skunks, I bought some possums. Never bought fur. Have to admit, I'm not exactly, didn't really like the process of it. That's just not my personality. Bought some fur. Bought it for $7, sold it for $20-something. It took me 3 years to get that money back. You know how much that was eating in my air-conditioned room? Nothing. I processed the fur. I vacuum-packed it in bags with a shop vac. Gorilla taped the snot out of the bag so air couldn't get in there. Kept it cool. When I opened them up, you couldn't tell that they weren't from this year. That's exactly what businesses that buy fur do. There's no reason a trapper can't do the same thing if he thinks about the long-term consequences of the decision he's going to be making as he sells stuff this year. So even when fur prices are down, catch it. You don't have to sell it. You get to dictate what your product is worth when you take it to the market to some degree. If you just catch everything and sell everything, you're at the mercy. You're on your knees and you're praying that you get something for your time and effort. I don't know how else to, I mean, to me, that brings up envisions of serfdom. I don't know about you, but I ain't a serf. I'm a free man, and I get to pick when I sell my production, and that's the way I look at it. Now, if coons are down $5 to $5, and all your buddies are griping about having $5 coon, buy it from them for $6 or $7. Put it up. Store it. Because what'll happen, you put 10,000, I need to have a calculator. So my math's going to be all screwed up here because it's off the top of my head. But if you buy $1,000 worth of coon at $5 a piece, there's 20 coon in 100, so 20 times 10, that's 200 coon. You have $1,000 in it. They go up to $20 in 3 years because the market always cycles. You're going to get, it'd be $4,000 for that $1,000 investment. Go talk to some one of these financial lawyers that sets up your 401k. Tell them you want that kind of return on your money. They're going to look at you and tell you it can't be done, but you can do it, guys. You can do it all the time, as long as you think. And don't give your stuff away because that's what the market is right now. I'll actually, back when the otter dropped, after the second year the otter dropped the last time, I had 2 friends in Louisiana that were getting offered $15 for their otter. I paid them, I don't know, $22 or $25 for those otter. I took my big butt in my 1-ton truck. I drove 500 miles to Louisiana. For one, I'm a sucker for Cajun food. I ate till I about popped. I brought back a ton truck worth of otter that I paid $25 on. I held those otter for 2 years, and I averaged $82 for them. Run the percentages on that. That's the only 2 times I bought fur. Run the percentages on that. Now, if you, most people say, well, they don't have money to do that. Well, I guarantee you, if you really wanted to have the money to do that, most people can come up with the money to do that. Why? Because they've got bass boats, they got four-wheelers, they got specialized hunting clothes that you know, you can basically take a dump in and something's not supposed to be able to smell you. They got new scopes, they got new guns, they got, people spend their money on what they want to spend their money on. And a business owner spends his money on things that makes money. And employee guys, I hate to say that, and I don't want to beat this down, but I really hope there's some guys out there that get this. An employee spends money for no reason except wants and needs, not to produce more money. And that's why they seem to stay in the same situation year after year, where they never have enough money because they can't trade enough time to get any more money, and they're stuck. If you look at your trapping like an entrepreneur, guys, you don't have to be stuck. You do not have to be stuck. Because what would happen in your life if you started running your trapping business in this sort of way? And you're, when bobcats are high, you sell them high. When otters are high, you sell them high. When coons are high, you're selling high. Do you not see the difference that is? I mean, instead of selling coon for $1,000, you're selling for $4,000 or more. I mean, if I was in Iowa and I'm trapping 1,000 coons a year and I've got all those expenses and stuff like that, you can bet your bottom dollar I'm going to be sitting down there with a pencil and a calculator. What do I need to get by that I need income out of what I'm doing right now? What I need, guys, need, not want, need. I'm going to sit there and I'm going to, okay, if I catch 1,000 coons at this price to pay back my expenses and what I need to do with this money to get by for right now, especially if I have another job or something like that, or another form of income that's coming up, what do I need to get back to get to that point? I would sell that amount of coon. Not one more. Not one more. So if I have 500 coon to make expenses to do what I need to do, I'm going to put that coon up and I'm going to store it. And if I've got to do that for 3 or 4 years, and coons at $25 a piece, and I go sell my 1,000 that year, plus the 500 from 3 years before that, and I've got 3,000 coon, dude, that's life-changing money if you're smart about it. You don't go buy a new car. You don't go buy a new boat. You don't go buy new guns. You figure out, how can I use this money to grow it even more? Now, sure, you can go on vacation with it. You can go buy a gun. You can do different stuff like that. Enjoy stuff that you're doing, but don't waste it all. Back at the end of the fur boom, you had two different type of people that came out of the fur boom. I've talked to a lot of them. There's only a small percentage that came out of the fur boom better off than they went into the fur boom. We're talking a decade of high fur prices. We're talking a decade of prices where they made as much or more than doctors. Trappers did. They were making so much money on a regular basis, it is just mind-blowing. When you look at the value of the dollar at that time, mind-blowing how much money they made. Most trappers, because they only thought about short-term hedonism, as soon as the market crashed in 87 on Black Friday, they were no better off than they were when the fur prices were low before it started. And I've also talked to other guys during that time. They had enough money because they saved all that money up and they went and bought apartment buildings. They bought farmland. They bought assets. They bought stuff that was something. When you talk to the other guys that were no better off after the fur boom as they were before the fur boom, except they ate a lot better, they drank a whole lot more beer, and they had new trucks, they can't even tell you what they spent the money on. Short-term hedonism is very abusive to the person that thinks that way. And if you're listening to this radio show, stop it. Don't be that guy. It has nothing to do with your ability to trap. It has nothing to do with where you're trapping at. It has nothing to do if you love trapping or not. It has nothing to do if you think trapping's a sport. Just be smart about it. Think about it. if you see everybody else in the trapping industry doing something, you better step back, scratch your head, and go, I don't know if following the herd's the best thing. Sheep get slaughtered, guys. They get slaughtered every day. Just like the stock market is right now. You can take this as a Clint Locklear Nostradamus prediction. That you're getting ready to see in the next 2 years another 2008 stock market crash because the government is pumping in 40 to 70 billion, that's with a B, billion dollars into the stock market. The stock market's up. Well, good God, you give me $70 billion, my business is going to be kicking too a month. No wonder the stock market's up. People are looking at that and they're putting more money into this, more money into this. It's a bubble. They're looking, they're not thinking, I mean, most people are just ignorant about money in period, but they're looking at that and all of a sudden their house prices start going up and you're going to start seeing people going to getting second mortgages for crap they don't need and they're not even going to know what it was 10 years from now. They're going to want to go do a bunch, the wife's going to want to, they're going to see something on TV where, you know, it's become popular, take a sledgehammer to your house. Biggest investment most people ever make. You're going to get a second mortgage, go destroy your house so you can get some more equity in a house. When that bubble drops, what happens? Same thing happened in 2008. People don't think with their money. They don't think past, just what can I get right now? Consumerism, and when you look at it that way, I mean, it's terrible. It's relentless to the person that thinks that way. If you're a trapper, don't think that way. For goodness sake, don't think that way. Trapping is a very unique industry. It's all production. We really don't have that much government regulations. We don't have EPA screwing with us. We don't have OSHA guys showing up making us fill out paperwork. We don't have all this type of stuff. We go out with the sweat of our brow and determination, and we catch what we catch, period. And then we get to choose how we want to do that. Do we want to tan it and sell it person to person? We can tan that stuff and build a business online where we sell pillows. And I see where guys are putting together foxes and they're selling $3,000 blankets and they're doing stuff like that. You've got that option. You can sell it to an auction house. You can give it away if you want to. You can tan it and put it in your shop and just let the mice eat it over the years. You can do whatever you want to. But just be smart about it, what you're doing. Sell what's high. Hold what's low. It's not that complicated. It's really not. Then when that is high, you sell it. Because the way stuff cycles, long hair, short hair, whatever, you catch it all the time. You get the choice of when you get to sell it. Now, another thing you can do to be smart about what you're doing, high dollar fur brings more money to international auctions if that's a hot item that year. Top your lot, guys. Top your lot. There's no, you know, one of the things Matt Jones did that I thought was genius because I never thought about doing it till I talked to him. He would take 2 to 3 of his best animals every single day, and that would go in a separate pile after it was put up. That went to NAFA. Everything else went to local auctions. He needed a run of money. At the end of the year, he got a nice check because he had the creme de la creme going to where they would pay for it. If you're doing that to a local buyer, he's not going to be able to do that. And how do I know this? If cats from Texas are averaging $150 to $200, when I send really, really nice stuff up in Napa, some of those cats are bringing close to $350 to close to $400. There ain't a local buyer in the country going to pay me that for that cat. So why would I give it away at $200? Just because it's an average high? If I do, it's my fault that I gave away that $200. Ain't the fur buyer's fault. He don't know if it's going to bring that much. Cats are a weird market. Same thing with otter. It's up to you to do that. You can separate your lots and send them to different places to make certain amounts of money. A lot of times cheaper fur does better at local sales. Better fur does better at big sales. And junk fur does really bad at big sales. Because they're seeing all of it at one time. If you don't learn how to put up your fur or pay somebody to put it up, guys, you don't have an option. You're going to sell it green. you're now again on your knees, begging for mercy, acting like a sir. Please, sir, give me something. Don't be that guy. Learn how to put it up. Yeah, it's work. There's also people, I haven't put up my own fern the last couple of years. I'm not ashamed of that. I pay somebody to do it. Because from a business point of view, I've got things during that time period I can make more money. I'm going to choose what allows me to make more money. That way I get to have a force multiplier on my time and energy as far as what comes in my in the mailbox. There's nothing wrong with that. Doesn't mean I'm less of a trapper. I put up tons of fur. I've been up to 2 or 3 in the morning putting up fur. I've gotten to the point where when I first got back from Alaska, I put up fur every morning until about 1 or 2 in the morning. And it was so cold in an unheated garage at my dad's house, I had to leave my truck running so I could keep stuff thawed out enough so I could bring it in and thaw it. Then I have to take it back out to the front seat of my truck, set it in there with the heater going, because it would be frozen to the point I couldn't flesh till it thawed out again. I know about putting up fur. It sucks if you're doing it in volume. But there's guys out there that are good at putting up fur, and they don't want to go slodge through the swamps all day long. That's no different than any other business. Work out a deal with them, let them do it. If you've got high fur prices, or you start looking at your fur in more than a short-term way, if you go catch 100 coon and you have someone put it up, or you go catch 1,000 coon and you have someone go put it up, how much farther ahead when you sell that fur at a high price? A lot. Because you only have so much energy and you only have so much you can do in a 24-hour period. I don't care how hardcore you are, eventually you got to sleep and you're going to get burnt out if you push it too hard for too long. I don't care who you are. So if you're trapping all day and you're putting up your fur, your trapping is going to suffer. And if you start looking at your trapping as a way to produce a product, because the only wealth besides stealing it, and if you take the government out of the equation, the only wealth that's ever produced comes from producing something. Not for hourly wages and stuff like that. It comes from producing something. You as a trapper, you've got a way to produce something. It's a product people want. So if you start looking at that way and start thinking things in a business fashion, now you start making some money. Even if you're not catching that much fur, you can double, triple, quadruple what a lot of guys are making in the fur if they would just use what's between their ears and not do what is easy and think in only in short term. Now we've been going at this long, and I don't want to just keep beating this, but it saddens me, guys. It really, really saddens me. You've got guys that bust their hump, and you may be one of them. You've got guys that, I mean, tear their bodies up. They get burnt out. They push stuff. They break equipment. I mean, you know, they go at it so freaking hard. And then they give that production away because they don't think. And it saddens me when I see that. I see guys that if they would use their head a little bit, it could change their life. Our economy, guys, is not going to get any better. The normalcy bias that Americans have that's always going to get better is out of whack right now. America owes more money than there is in existence. We can't pay it off. That right now, we're monetizing the stock market to the point through debt that is unbelievable. $40 to $70 billion a month. That bubble's going to pop. There's things being set up in place right now. If you quit listening to Fox News and CNN and all these just mouthpieces of mediocrity, and you actually go out and start looking about what's going on in the world economy, the dollar is going to be in serious trouble in the not too distant future. I don't think it's going to be this year or next year, but I think it's going to be in serious trouble. If you don't have a way to generate income and be smart about it, or set yourself up knowing that the economy is just going to keep getting worse, it's going to be a sad day for a lot of trappers. It really is. Because we have been taught to go in debt all the time. All the time. new vehicles, new houses, new starter homes, bigger homes, bigger homes, bigger homes. You know, guys, one thing to really think about is just the difference of when you start thinking for yourself and not what you're told to think. Is a house an investment? You're told it's an investment. Most people believe a house is an investment. The way houses are investment is if you buy them like your grandparents bought them. They bought a house. They raised a family. They died in it. There was no such thing as a starter home. They bought them at a certain price, and because 70 years later they still had it and it was paid off as fast as they could pay it off, there was a ton of money to be made on those houses. That's not the way we do it. Because you're not thinking. You buy a house. Within most 5-6 years, people buy another house because it's a starter house. I mean, how ludicrous is that? A starter house. So you buy a starter house and you go buy another house. So let's say you got a house for $100,000. If you're up north, that may be hard to do. But if you're down here, $100,000, I didn't pay $100,000 for my house, not even close. But if you have a $100,000 house, you're taught that's an investment. By the time you pay that insurance back, the interest on that house over 30 years, you're going to have somewhere close to $200,000 into that house. Inside of that 30 years, you're going to have all kind of maintenance you had to do on that house. You've been paying taxes on that house. All that money that's going out is if you put it on a piece of paper, this is every penny I've got into this house on one side, and you turn around and you sell that house for $150,000. Most people, because they don't use their brain, thinks they made $50,000. No, you didn't. You lost money. You lost a lot of money. And you lost a lot of your production because you lost that money. Houses are not an investment. But you can invest in your own business and fur. That's what drives me absolutely insane, guys. And I'm going to finish with this. This is what drives me absolutely insane. And I'm not a know-it-all. I read a tremendous amount of business books. I have studied money going back to the Roman times. I want to know what's going on because my production is pretty personal to me. I don't want to waste it. I don't want to waste time. I don't want to waste years, and I don't want to waste money. People today, and I see it in trapping and blue collar type stuff more than anything else. And that's not a negative. I think it's more of a blue collar is more of a positive than a negative. But the mindset of blue collar, and they listen to what people tell them to the point where they believe it. One, your house is an investment. No, it's not. It's a place to live. You got to pay for something somewhere. So unless you're buying a small house and you die in that house, which then it ain't going to do you no good anyway, it ain't an investment. It's a house. Pay it off. You go get a $30,000, $40,000 new truck. You make $40,000 a year. You gave a year of your life for a piece of machinery that's going to break down. The new smell and the oohs and ahs from your friend goes away in about 45 days. But you spend a whole year of your life. So if you buy 10 new vehicles and you pay for them, that's 10 years of your life. Think about that. That's crazy. And then what little bit of money you got left over because you went and did the American dream of all this debt, you stick it in a retirement. You go listen to a financial liar tell you what he thinks is supposed to happen. And guys, it don't matter if you're a millionaire or you make $20,000 a year. You get the same sales pitch with the same mutual funds, same 401ks, and the same IRAs. Makes no difference. It's the same speech. They don't have a freaking clue what they're doing. It's not even set up in your favor. It's not. And if you've bought into all that, you're going to think I'm crazy. Dude, go do your own research. Not what they show you. Start getting outside of their realm and start looking at the 401k. You can't even in a 401k right now put money in cash. The safest investment supposedly you do. They'll call it cash. You just start digging around in your 401k. It's in government bonds. You're investing in a broke government. Congratulations. They're not even telling you that. If you've got a government job, they're stealing their pension every day. What do you? How do you think there's months at a time when the debt clock doesn't go up? Money's coming from somewhere, and it's your pension. You don't have money in it anymore. You got an IOU, just like Social Security. That's a reality. People buy into this nonsense. They buy into, if you put so much money in this account, by the time we retire, it's gonna be higher. You look at the valuations they're giving you. They're giving you bubble numbers based off something in the 1980s. Not the 2% you're getting today, but the 10% you're not getting. So what you're not getting is what you're basing your whole future on. That's insanity. That's absolutely insanity. But you as a trapper, regardless if you do business, every person needs to be a business owner, period. And when we do our business show, you're going to see why. Period. You need to have a small business, whether it be trapping or something else. But you need to have a small business. If you don't, only thing that I can say is that when you look at yourself when you're 70 years old in a mirror, if you just work for somebody your whole life, you're going to see sucker written across your forehead one of these days in the mirror. Because it's eventually going to sink in. But most people, it sinks in when it's way too late. And if you're a young guy, everybody that tells you how to make money, and everybody that's telling you that you do the career path that everybody else is supposedly doing, don't do it. Because you're going to end up probably just as broke and just as miserable as everybody else. Don't do it. You don't have to do it, guys. You do not have to do it. As a small business owner, someone who thinks, I'm going to tell you the difference between someone in my plan and someone in a stock market plan. I can take $10 and turn it into $20. I'm going to use lure as an example. I've got $10 worth of product. I can put that in a bottle and I can sell it, and that's $20. Or DVDs, or I can start building traps. I can start making snares. I can start holding my fur. It doesn't make any difference. It makes no difference. But I can take a certain amount of money and turn it into a bigger pile of money. And as long as I'm smart with that money, if the stock market goes down, I don't lose 40% of it. Because people look at their 401ks and they go, well, I lost 60% of that money, but after 10 years, I got it back. I'm good. No, you're not. You lost 10 years of production from that money. You gave it to the bankers. Congratulations. They didn't even send you a Christmas card. But a small business owner, whether you're cutting grass, it doesn't make any difference. You've got a lawnmower. You pay that lawnmower off as soon as you can. You don't put your traps on credit. You pay for them when you can. You build an inventory, paid for. Then you take that investment and you go do things to make more money. And that can grow drastically. Because if a business can do a 30% profit on their money, and they're giving you 1.3% in a CD, that person on the CD is going to do in 30 years what someone that uses their head does in a year. And then every year after that, there's no way for the person doing the CD or something like that to catch up. There's no way. You can talk about compounding interest and do all you want to. If you're making money in a business and you're smart about it, the compound gets so out of control and so crazy, you can't even talk in terms that the stock market talks in. But the marketing behind investing is so strong and it's beating your head so much, you automatically believe it, just like your house. On a house, if you run a book ledger of money going in and money going out, at the end of the time you sell a house, and most times you've got to sell a house for three times what you've got into it to make income if you keep that loan for 30 years. But you're not taught that. That $50,000 is pure profit. Man, look at you. Now you can go buy a bigger house. Get in more debt. Take more of your production, more of your time, and more of your life so you can lose money on the second one. So when you're thinking about your trapping, think about it in what I'm talking about. Be smart. Use this to make your life better. Way better than hearing the geese come across the lake when you're muskrat trapping. Way better than that. Because you can do both in this business. You can go out and be with nature and have a better life. And that's what I want to impart. For goodness sake, guys, don't give your production away. It's yours. Now, is everything that you're going to do always going to be max profit? No. But get your licks in when you can get them. And you'll never get your licks in if you give it away. So think about that this week. Are you giving your production away? Are you on your knees hoping, nervously, that you'll get what you need to get or what you want to get? And then what are you going to do with that money? Once you get it, what are you going to do? You going to waste it? You just going to eat more pizza, drink more beer? Are you going to take that money and you're going to grow with it? It's your choice. That's why it seems like some people in the trapping industry do very well and some people don't. Most people follow the herd. Sheep get slaughtered. Just a little bit to think about. Now go trapping.
Damn, what other people think? What do you think about that?